Ross Tucker. Our insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. And Ross, we could probably talk to you about this as well. You cover a ton of college football, I know, especially in the Mountain West as well. So you've probably seen this kid play, or at least have watched UNLV quite a bit as well. Real quick, before we get to NFL, I don't know if you're familiar with the story this morning or not, but what's your kind of opinion, if you have any at all?
Yeah, I got a lot to say on this, actually. You came to the right guy, because I think I called Spluka's fourth game ever, maybe, when he was a true freshman to Holy Cross in the Patriot League Championship game.
Oh, wow.
And then I definitely called his game against Army last year, but I've been following him since that game in the spring of 2001, which is when the FCS played after COVID. So I don't know if you guys have seen the latest, but you can kind of tell this based on his social post. But his dad has said that he was promised $100,000 and all he got was $3,000 to move from Holy Cross to UNLV, and that they've said multiple times, you know, throughout the spring, the summer, like, where's the money, where's the money? Hasn't gotten it. All he's done is lead them to, by far, the best start in school history, right? I mean, they're 3-0. They beat two Big 12 teams, including KU, on the road. Like, that never happens for UNLV football, ever. They're ranked for the first time ever. They actually have the best chance of anyone of making the playoffs right now from the non-Power 4 leagues. And I don't know, I'm sure... I have no idea what UNLV would say about this, right? What I would tell you guys, I've watched him play a lot. He is not an NFL quarterback. He does not throw it well enough to play in the NFL. He's a terrific runner. He's incredibly hard-nosed. And, you know, they've been running him like 10 to 15 times a game, including a bunch against Kansas a couple weeks ago. You know, he probably realistically, this is his last year of eligibility to really get any kind of money. And I think he would have been happy. His dad said he would have been happy to stay at UNLV and finish out this year if he got the $100,000, but he didn't. And to me, I mean, first of all, we could have a whole discussion about being offered the money and not getting it, because I hear that that's happening more and more in college football. And, you know, this just happens to be a young man who is willing to take a stand and do something. Now, most guys, most of these kids aren't willing to do anything about it. He is. And so, you know, a lot of these quarterbacks, I mean, the UNLV quarterback from last year went to USC for $600,000. I know the Colorado State quarterback got offered $600,000. Spluka, I would tell you, probably worth at least like $500,000 to a Power 4 school. So if you were my son, in particular if UNLV is not paying, you know, fulfilling their obligation, but just in general, if he's not going to be an NFL player, and he's not certainly not a quarterback, you know, he's got one more year to try to capitalize on that. And if UNLV is not even going to give him the 100 that – honestly, he's already earned with just these three games, and I don't blame him at all.
Yeah,
because he'll get $500,000 plus from some other SEC or whatever school this offseason to play next year in his final year of eligibility. So honestly, guys, the whole thing just makes me really, really sad. Like, I'm incredibly sad for him. He moves to Vegas. He, you know, he's playing in these big games and TV, and they're winning, but he's not getting what he was promised. I'm so sad for the UNLV teammates. I mean, think about how excited they are about their season and where they are and what can happen and the possibilities. You know, UNLV fans, I guess, to a lesser extent, but really sad for the young man, his family, his teammates, because they had such a promising season going. You got to know that this was the last resort. He absolutely did not want to do this. Felt like he had to. And what's really crazy, you guys know, because he was at Mizzou, is, yeah, I guess, I mean, with now it's such a bad look for UNLV, and that coach Odom is such a good coach and seems poised to get a really big job this offseason. I'm fascinated by the whole thing. I'm sad by the whole thing, because you'd think from somebody at UNLV's perspective, they would have been much better off just giving them the other $97,000 so they have this magical year, keep going, and they don't get all the negative publicity that's now going to come their way.
When you look at what the Chiefs are doing, let's switch back over to the NFL side, Ross. Obviously, the big conversation is they're 3-0, even though I don't think they're playing their best football. I don't think most people would say they're playing a particularly fun or interesting brand of offensive football. Are you actually concerned about the Chiefs' offense or their inability to get a deep passing game? Or is this just one of those, if you're on the Chiefs team, you're like, I don't care, we're 3-0. We'll figure out the rest of it later.
I think there's a little bit of both of those things. You know, it's so funny because you guys know, you know, I do these radio hits on stations all over the country. It's hilarious after the Ravens game, after the Bengals game, after the Falcons game. All these cities, they're like, you know what? We were right there with the Chiefs. This is like a real positive. You know, we were right there. We were a play or two away. I mean, the Chiefs have become the team that even when they beat the other team, when they didn't play their best, the other teams are, like, happy that they were in a game with them. I mean, think about that for a second. Like, this is the NFL. That is nuts. Every week they're like, you know what, though? That's a good sign for us moving forward. Oh, really? Because the Bengals just lost at home to the Commanders. You know what I mean? Like, is it really a good sign? I'm not sure it is. So I think from a Chiefs perspective, I would be highly encouraged that it doesn't feel like they're playing nearly their best, and yet they're still winning. There's a lot of room for improvement, and if they keep improving, then they'll clearly be the class of the NFL. I wrote last week, I think they have the best chance of any team to three-peat in my lifetime. Now, obviously, there's not that many opportunities for it, but their division's not very good. Their conference, even, I'm skeptical of their conference. I think the Bills have gotten off to a much better start than I was expecting. So it's pretty wild when you think about it, just to think where we are at now. I mean, and now, like, the big thing is, like, Travis Kelce. I mean, this is what we're worried about. They're not winning by enough, or that even when they're winning, Travis Kelce isn't getting enough yards or touchdowns. I mean, you guys have some champagne problems out there.
No question, Ross. As we're talking to Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store. So the tight end position, that's one thing, Travis Kelce. Then we now know the left tackle has been the other part of the conversation. We've asked you two straight weeks in a row. Now it looks like Wanya Morris for sure is going to be the left tackle unless he gets hurt, basically, at this point in time. Did you have a chance to take a look at what you saw from Wanya, and do you believe that now watching it, it was clearly the right decision to switch away from Kingsley?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. Wanya looked more comfortable, and I think especially Kingsley seemed like he had lost his confidence, and that's a bad, bad deal as an offensive lineman. I've been there when you lose your confidence. When you lose your confidence, guys, you stop trusting your technique, and then you're really in trouble, right? Then you're all out of whack. Things compound themselves. You know, I think he still has a chance to be a good player, but he's got to get to a point where he gets that confidence back. You almost have to be like a corner where you're going against some good players like Hendrickson or whoever. You're going to get beat every once in a while, but you can't get beat. We always used to say you can have a bad play, you can't have a bad day. Felt like Kingsley was starting to let, you know, a bad play turn into a bad day, and that's not okay. And then it was affecting his technique, and he starts questioning what he's doing. And yeah, I think they're in a better place with Wanya for the foreseeable future.
You had mentioned the Bills in a previous answer. Do you think it's just Chiefs and Bills as the class of the AFC right now? Do you want to include the Texans, Jets? I mean, maybe you're a big Steelers guy. I don't want to. I mean, you are a Pittsburgh guy, so I don't want you to rule them out either.
Whoa.
He's a Philly guy.
He's a Philly guy. Pennsylvania guy. My bad, you're an Eagles guy. I was getting the states mixed up. I was just thinking like...
PA guy.
Okay, so you can bag like on the Steelers.
We don't like those West Siders, all right? No, I'm kidding. It's really funny because I grew up an hour west of Philly, and it's 100% Eagles. Now I live an hour further west of that, like in the state capital, which is Harrisburg, or people know Hershey Chocolate or whatever. And it's like 50-50. It's just wild how like that the 1 hour makes that much of a difference. So I got no beef with the Steelers. In fact, I'm just incredibly impressed. They actually remind me a little bit this year of the Chiefs. Both the Chiefs and the Steelers, every game they play is the exact same game. I mean, the Chiefs, every game it's like, oh, it's going both ways. Oh, no, they won again. You know what I mean? and the Steelers, it's like every game is 13-10, and somehow they win at the end. I don't really, the Steelers have got to play better than this offensively for me to think that they're a legitimate contender against the Chiefs. I do think that the Texans and the Jets have enough that they could give, they could certainly give the Chiefs a really good game. But so far, it's definitely been the Bills. I mean, I'm really surprised. Guys, they lost from, like, the core Bills team that have played against the Chiefs in the playoffs in recent years. They have lost their starting center, Mitch Morse, both starting receivers, Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs, both starting safeties, Poyer and Hyde. They're starting Tre'Davious White. None of those guys are on the team anymore. And then of the guys that still were on the team, they don't have their three best defensive players. Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, Taron Johnson, all at the second level. And they're killing teams. Second straight Bills game I did on the radio where the fourth quarter, they had their backups in like it was a preseason game. I mean, they're murdering these teams right now. Josh Allen, two games in a row, has not even had a turnover-worthy play. It feels like he's kind of figured it out. So right now, I think you can make a strong argument that the Buffalo Bills are the best team in ball.
Lastly for you, Russ, we saw Jaden Daniels there on Monday Night Football. It seems like that was the start of the Jaden Daniels era. That one throw in particular, Terry McLaurin at the very end, was big time. That was a legit elite NFL throw. Do you think, I know it's three games in, but are you now buying in more than maybe you were before, if depending on how you viewed him before the season? How can you not?
So I was already really high on Jaden Daniels. And the thing that was so interesting to me about it, you guys know I do the daily Ross Tucker football podcast. And I'm telling you, February, March, April, okay, I think every guy I had on my show, Greg Cosell, Chase Daniel, Phil Sims, Sean King, Emory Hunt, like all of these former NFL quarterbacks or quarterback gurus or whatever, they all either said they liked Jaden Daniels more than Caleb Williams, or they intimated as much in the conversation. So to me, this is not just like a three-game sample size, right? This is not, which by the way, it's the only sample size we have, but it's just how I felt about him. And I'm not one of those guys that like watches all his college tape and pretends I'm a quarterback guru or whatever. It's really just based on, what the experts tell me. They all liked him more than Caleb Williams, or at least it sounded like they did. And now he's clearly playing much better than Caleb Williams is. So I don't know. I mean, that's good enough for me. And maybe Caleb Williams will end up being a better player than Jaden Daniels. But you guys tell me. I mean, who would you take at this point between those two? And I know it's a small thing, but I would have probably taken Daniels just by way on, based on what everybody said, but based on what I've seen so far, I'm definitely taking Jaden Daniels if I could pick either guy right now.
Yeah, I think you'd have a hard time finding anybody to give you a different answer at this point. You know, there were questions already, though, with Caleb Williams in the situation. On one hand, we all acknowledged, hey, he's got more weapons than any other rookie quarterback and maybe in NFL history. But at the same time, the coaching staff and OC questions, and I think 3 weeks in, you're starting to see why people were concerned about the offensive coordinator there.
Yes, I think there's no question about it. Right now, it's early, and I think Caleb Williams showed more in this last game, sort of in garbage time, than Bryce Young really ever did last year for the Panthers, but there's certainly some similarities between those two situations, for sure.
All right, Ross, appreciate it, man. We'll check in next week.
Awesome. Sounds good to see you guys.